Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our next conversations, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community or the community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com. We are joined here by Sarah. Is it Childress or Childress? I should have asked before. Sarah, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm sorry, Sarah. Is it Childress or Childress?
It's Childress.
Childress, I'm not sure. Sarah Childress, who is a reporter for the PBS investigative series Frontline. And you can read Sarah's report at pbs.org/frontline on Trapped in the Hole, America's Solitary Problem, which we've covered before on this air, the nature of solitary confinement. But this is a really fascinating piece that you did, Sarah. Talk about, I mean, what began this, what the Justice Department investigation that began in 2011, what it was and what you discovered through this.
Sure. Well, the investigation is really quite interesting. You have the Department of Justice looking into allegations that there were human rights abuses at a state penitentiary in Pennsylvania, known as Crescent. And they took about a year and a half looking into these allegations, and what they found was really troubling. They found that inmates were held in solitary for months, even years. They called them being warehoused. Essentially, in isolated cells that reeked of urine and feces. They were denied basic necessities, and guards would leave them restrained for hours at a time. What was especially troubling about this was that you have this this treatment is going beyond sort of the punitive isolation that you think of when you have inmates being placed in these isolation cells. These were people often with serious mental illnesses who needed treatment and that they weren't receiving, and instead were just being shut up, locked away in these in these isolation cells.
So, the effects of isolation on these inmates in this particular prison. I've seen other stories. People have written about what's happened in Maryland, other places with solitary, in other states around the country. The higher suicide rate, the effects on people once they come out. That takes a long time for them to even be able to enter a prison, let alone society. I mean, it's. The effects of solitary confinement, I think we don't understand. We just know it as a way to kind of control what we would think of as violent prisoners who don't want to cooperate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I found from talking to experts of people who work with people who have been in solitary confinement for long periods of time is that, it affects everybody differently. But what they found is that, basically the best case scenario is that they'll come out no worse than they went in, is what one psychologist told me. People tend to, there's something called isolation panic, which a lot of people experience when they're first put in isolation. But then as you're put in for longer periods of time, most people start to break down. And the UN themselves have said that any isolation longer than 15 days is actually considered abusive. And in the U.S., solitary people are usually sentenced to solitary for 30 or 60 days or even longer. And what happens, especially when people are mentally ill, is they start to act out in solitary, which means they end up spending longer and longer time. So, you've been sentenced for 30 days, then you act out, you get 30 more days, and so on. And so this is how you end up with inmates spending months, even years, confined to a cell for at least 22 hours a day, and with limited contact with the outside world.
And even though, as you pointed out, in your piece, that the Government Accountability Office has criticized the use of solitary inside the federal prison system, the Federal Bureau of Prisons themselves, even though inmates are into solitary for longer and longer periods. There is no data, there is no information on how this affects people who are put in solitary, whether they're being treated properly, whether we are doing something that's arcane in the 19th century and even works, has any place in our prison system.
That was one of the really interesting things that, the federal government found. I mean, you have the Bureau of Prisons, which tends to be, has been in the past, the leader at the forefront of prison reform, figuring out what works, what doesn't. And when the federal government, when this watchdog branch of the government, the Government Accountability Office, took a look at this, what they found was that, as you said, you know, not only does the Bureau of Prisons not even track whether inmates are being treated properly, whether they're getting the meals, the three meals a day, whether they're getting the 1 hour of exercise that, the law requires. They also couldn't tell, one, what impact it had on the inmates, or whether it worked at all. They had no evidence to show that this was reducing violence, reducing assaults, reducing inmates acting out. And another thing that they pointed out was that a few states have scaled back their use of solitary confinement. There's five, Colorado, Kansas, Maine, Mississippi, and Ohio. They've stopped placing as many inmates in isolation, largely due to budget cuts, not because of any adverse impacts of solitary. But what these states have found is that there's been no impact on the institutional safety, no impact on increases in violence. So essentially, these states are seem to show in reducing their use, that solitary actually doesn't have any impact on the level of violence in a prison.
Continue where we left off. I think that's what really struck me, and I think that the question is that this report, or the kind of reporting you're doing on Frontline around issues like solitary confinement, whether we'll actually begin a conversation in a larger way in our country about the use of solitary, and whether it is kind of, as I said, an arcane, that some people would argue, almost abusive system that really isn't needed to control violence or control prisoners. There could be other ways of separating prisoners who are disruptive rather than putting people in solitary for a month or months on end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think we're starting to see that, and it's been driven largely by budget cuts, seems.
Right.
At the state level.
Right.
You know, states are starting to look at this and say, you know, do we really need to be putting so many people in isolation? You know, it usually costs about twice as much to house a prisoner in isolation than it does in the general population, just because you need more guards, you need to pay for that extra time, that extra supervision. So states are starting to say, do we really need that? And when they look at it, they realize it's really having no impact. It could be detrimental to the prisoners, and it's not doing anything to control the prison population, and that's what's really sort of starting to spur the change at the state level. We haven't seen, you know, as you said, any change at the federal level at this time. The Bureau of Prisons agreed with the criticisms in the report, but doesn't seem to have any evidence or shown any sort of interest in moving forward with any kind of reform at this time.
So are you going to follow up on this report? Is there more work coming on this from you?
We'll definitely be following this. You know, I know that the federal government is continuing to look at it, especially paying attention to the treatment of mentally ill prisoners,
right.
Because putting them in isolation is extremely problematic because, you know, they should obviously have medication and therapy and other treatments instead of being, you know, sort of housed away. There's also other lawsuits on the horizon. Just last month, the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a suit against a state prison in Mississippi, where they said, you know, they alleged that there's barbaric conditions is the word that the lawsuit used. You know, shutting away people in solitary for weeks at a time in what's called the dead man zone, because they're not even supervised. You know, so there's still other abuses that are coming to light, and it's something we'll definitely continue to follow.
Well, we will continue to follow your work and look forward to it. And Frontline is one of our most valuable services, and we still have it on PBS.
Hey.
I really am.
Me too.
You are as well, for many reasons.
Yeah.
And we will link to Sarah Childress's work. You can read Sarah's report at pbs.org/frontline. And Sarah, thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We're going to take a very brief break and come right back, and we're going to have an update from Felipe Souza Rodriguez on the Supreme Court decision, and then go into a conversation about Bradley Manning. Stay with us.